Tyler Friel with you on The Rock Station 97.7, and a pleasure to be joined on the phone line by Chris France. He is the drummer from the Talking Heads, and he's out with a new book called Remain in Love, Talking Heads, Tom Tom Club, Tina. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time. Great to talk to you.
Likewise, Tyler. Hi, everybody.
And I want to start with this. Maybe some of our listeners are not aware, but you are a Pittsburgh guy by nature, as you had been to, you and I were talking before we jumped on the air here, that you have been to a number of schools and went to a number of schools here in the Pittsburgh area.
Yeah, we first moved to, my father was a native Pittsburgher. He was born in what is now the Hill District. He moved back to Pittsburgh in 1960 because he was becoming a lawyer. He had been in the military, in the Army, and the Army sent him to law school. And then he was a lawyer for the Army for a while, and then he had to he went into private practice, and he moved back to Pittsburgh because that's where he had some connections, you know, some clients, and you know, cousins and aunts and uncles and things like that. So we moved to Pittsburgh, and we moved to the North Hills, a little place called McKnight Village, which is, I believe it's still there. It was like row houses, little townhouse, two-bedroom townhouses. Lots of kids there, lots of young families. It was really fun. And I went to Berkeley Hills School. And then we, after a few years of being there, we moved to O'Hara Township, and I went to Kerr School, which is where I started in the band, playing in the band, and which I really loved. And then I graduated from elementary school, and I went to Aspinwall Junior High School, which I don't believe exists anymore. And it was, you know, one of those schools on the way out to Butler. And that was great because I was in the school band there, and also that was at the time the Beatles arrived in America in 1964, and everybody started forming little, you know, we actually called them combos at the time, but little, you know, quartets and trios, whatnot, and I was in one called the Lost Chords, and the Lost Chords did. Many of the members are still in living in Pittsburgh, but we did cover songs. You know, Beatles, Ventures, Dave Clark Five, maybe some Beach Boys. I can't remember exactly. But it was a lot of fun. And then I went to high school at Shadyside Academy, which is in Fox Chapel. I sort of moved, at that point in my life, I sort of moved from playing music into painting, drawing and painting. And I had an excellent, well, all my teachers were good at Shadyside, but in particular, my studio art teacher, Mr. Miller, David Miller, who is still alive and well and painting in Saratoga Springs, New York. But he turned me on to art in a big way and suggested that I should go to art school. So I went to art school at the Rhode Island School of Design, and at great expense to my parents in those days. I think in those days the tuition was $5,000, which was a lot of money in those days. And that's where I met my bride-to-be, Tina Weymouth, and also where I met David Byrne. And David Byrne and I started playing in a little band together called the Artistics. The sole purpose of the band was to entertain our friends and amuse ourselves, you know. Mm-hmm. It was not a serious band, although people seemed to like us. We did mostly cover songs. And then, this is in my book, one day Tina and I shared a painting studio on the RISD campus, and this is in Providence, Rhode Island. And one day David came knocking on the door, and he said to Tina and I, I have the beginnings of a song. I wonder if you could help me finish it. And we said, sure. We dropped what we were doing, and we sat down with him, and he played us the opening verse and chorus for this song, which he said was loosely based on an Alice Cooper, or had kind of an Alice Cooper vibe to it. You know, Alice Cooper was very big at the time. This is 1973. And I listened to it, and I thought, well, I really like this. This sounds kind of like a mashup between the Velvet Underground and Otis Redding. And the name of the song was Psycho Killer.
And that turned out to be a pretty good one.
Yeah, it was the first song we ever wrote together. David asked for Tina to write the bridge of the song, the middle eight section, in a foreign language. And Tina's mother was from France, and French was spoken in the home. So Tina wrote the middle eight section in French. And then I wrote two or three more verses, one of which was later cut from the song. But so that was our first collaboration, and I thought to myself, damn, I really like this. And David did too, and Tina did. And we thought, well, we should do more of this. So one thing led to another, and we moved to New York after Tina and I graduated. David had kind of dropped out and had been hitchhiking around the country, and but we decided we would all three move to New York. David and I had the intention of starting another band. I was hoping that Tina would be in it, but I hadn't really convinced her yet. She said, like, I'll be supportive of you, but I'm not going to join the band. It's like a boys' club. It's asking for trouble. So David and I started looking around for people to join our band, and nobody took us seriously. You know, it was like, well, one of the people we asked to be our singer was Debbie Harry. This is also in my book. And we saw her perform, David and I did, at CBGB's, and after the performance, this is prior to Blondie, the band was called Angel and the Snake. Debbie was the singer, or the lead singer anyway, and I thought, wow, she's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty much in every way. So after the performance, I went up and I said, hi, my name is Chris Prance, and this is David Byrne, and we're starting a band, and we wanted to know, would you be interested in singing with us? And she said, very sweetly, well, I've already got a band, but you can buy me a drink. And that was the beginning. Debbie wrote this wonderful blurb on the back of my book. This was the beginning of a very long-lasting friendship with Debbie. You know, those were marvelous times. But eventually, Tina realized that we weren't finding anyone to play with us, and she made kind of like the ultimate sacrifice. And unbeknownst to us, she was working in a department store in New York as a sales girl, and she was getting paid much less than David and I were getting at our day jobs, you know, because that's how it was for women. Mm-hmm. But she put down, she would actually skip her lunch and put down every week $5 on the bass guitar, you know, a vintage bass guitar, a 1963 Fender Precision, which, if you're a bass guitarist, you know, is an excellent primo bass guitar. So anyway, one day, I think it was right after her, like, 22nd birthday, her parents had given her $100 for her as a birthday present, and she took that $100 and paid off the layaway plan on the bass guitar, and she came walking into our loft with this bass guitar, and I just thought to myself, hallelujah. And we started the band as a trio, and Tina taught herself to play, and she came up with, you know, she didn't have a kind of standard formulaic rock and roll vocabulary. She hadn't she as a kid, she hadn't learned to play all the rock and roll songs that, say, for example, David and I had. So she brought into the mix of almost a classical. Now, she could later on get very funky, but as you can hear from Psycho Killer on, every bass part she played was, like, totally interesting and recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a number of Talking Heads songs where you recognize the song right away because of what the bass part is. So that's why I, from my point of view, Tina is kind of like the hero of the band. The rest of us worked very hard, and everybody in the band was, you know, well talented. But to me, I thought, well, when I sat down to write this book, I thought, I'm going to make Tina the focus of the book, you know, because to me, without Tina, Talking Heads would have been just another rock band.
It definitely has that. It by everything you say, and when you read the book, I think that definitely comes across. And obviously, and I would think it was reading, I think it was an old Times review of a Talking Heads concert, and it had talked about how you and Tina seemed so in sync at that point, and just how, you know, you meshed off of one each other extremely well. Well, of course, you've been married all this time, so it seems like that's the case. But what's that feeling like when you're playing up on stage with someone who you're married to, who, you know, the love of your life, to be just, you know, on that same page together?
It's a wonderful feeling. It's now I've been playing with Tina since like 1975. I still don't take it for granted, though. I mean, mm-hmm. when I play with her, I have so much fun, and you know, we lock together like a drummer and a bass player are supposed to do, and they call that being in the pocket.
Mm.
And we are definitely, when we're together, we're in the pocket.
And I, you know, you mentioned Psycho Killer, which is fascinating to me that that's the first song. And that bass line, to me, still sticks out. It's one of those songs, the first time you hear it, your ears perk up and you go, okay, what is this? This sounds awesome. And, you know,
yeah.
Those types of, and that to me, you know, to give my background, I'm a little bit younger. I'm still in my 20s. And the first time that I heard the Talking Heads, I was in high school. And it just goes, okay, what's this? This sounds different. And I think the evolution of the band, to me, is one thing that is fascinating to follow along from Talking Heads 77 to where you guys finish up. It seems like it was a wild ride over the course of those years.
It was. I mean, we challenged ourselves, I think, musically speaking, and also physically. I mean, you know, touring is pretty tiresome work.
Mm-hmm.
But I gotta say, I did enjoy it. I mean, there's something. Like, even today, I don't miss TSA or anything like that, but I do miss getting on an airplane and going to some exotic location, like Tokyo or Paris.
Not to interrupt you, but what's that experience like to play in front? Because, you know, I've only seen shows here in America, and most of the bands that I see are American or English, you know, they speak the language. What's it like to go to an exotic location where, you know, no one, maybe the crowd isn't all in tune to, or they're not an English-speaking crowd? What's it like to play in front of an audience like that?
Well, you know, they, in Europe anyway, they don't care what language it is. As long as, in fact, they kind of, people, at least in the past, I don't know about today exactly, but in the past, when it came to rock and roll music and most popular music, people in Europe really looked to America. And at the time we were getting going, they were really looking at New York in particular, because New York had CBGBs and Max's Kansas City and that whole downtown romantic mythology. You know, with from the Velvet Underground and Bob Dylan and all that on. Like, the first time we toured Europe was with the Ramones, and we were, Talking Heads was the support band, and the posters would say, Ramones, Talking Heads, but then in big letters on the bottom, New York Rock, CBGB. And that was all they had to put on the poster to sell tickets, was New York Rock, CBGBs, and the kids would come. And so So we had a great tour with the Ramones, and every night was sold out, and every night was, you know, pretty much pandemonium, which is what which is a good thing in the case of a rock concert. And you know the Europeans definitely get American music and love it. I mean, jazz, the blues, and they also love reggae music in France and England and the Netherlands. So they have, you know, one thing about it is you can appreciate this. The radio stations in Europe, maybe not so much today, but even still today, the playlists are very diverse. You don't have a station that's just rock, for example, or just jazz, or just country. They get it all mixed up, and they play all kinds of stuff, you know, during the same radio program. So that was good for us. We could get onto the radio in a way that it was very difficult to get onto the radio in the USA.
And we are talking with Chris France. He's the drummer of Talking Heads, and he's out with a new book, Remain in Love, Talking Heads, Tom Tom Club. Tina, I think in part of your book, too, there is, and you know, talking about New York and the rock scene there, you do have this affinity for that New York scene. What's it like to be a part of a moment like that, especially now as you can look back on it, you know, that this happened back in the 70s. In retrospect, what's that feeling like that you guys were a major part of this musical movement?
Well, I feel very good about it, and I feel very fortunate that we were in the right place at the right time. Like when we left the Rhode Island School of Design, there was never any question in our minds where we were going to go. It was to New York. I mean, we weren't thinking about L.A. or Miami or Nashville or anything like that. Straight to New York, because that's where Lou Reed was, and that's where Andy Warhol was, and that's where, you know, a lot of great artists, Robert Rauschenberg, Jasper Johns, people were, there was the whole conceptual art movement, there was the very avant-garde music movement with Philip Glass and Steve Reich. It was just a very exciting place to go. And we got to know these people after moving there, which was so fantastic. I mean, I never thought I would be having lunch with Andy Warhol, a great Pittsburgher.
Absolutely.
So that was a very romantic time. And the bands. I mean, the first time I went to CBGB's, the first performance I saw was the Ramones. The second was, I think, Patti Smith. Maybe Television, so one or the other, and both of those bands were amazing, and then Blondie, and then other bands like Mink DeVille and The Shirt, the band called The Mumps, Suicide. I mean, I don't know if you know about Suicide.
I do not.
Bruce Springsteen covered one of their songs called Dream Baby Dream, which I think today you should call it Stream Baby Stream.
it's fascinating to me, the New York scene, how Talking Heads developed. And then I also want to touch, too, a little bit, Chris, on live performances. Stop Making Sense, obviously held in very high regard even to this day. I don't know if you want to take me through some of the planning process behind that, but it's such a well-done videography-wise, and then also just in terms of the music, it's still a great watch to this day.
Yeah, well, we that show was designed in New York. We rehearsed for months, well, maybe not months, but definitely weeks, and I think maybe 6 weeks, something like that, on a pier in New York, an old abandoned pier that was, you know, covered. And David was very keen, David Byrne was very keen on having a kind of modern presentation, something that was, you know, verging on avant-garde. And so he hired the playwright Robert Wilson's favorite lighting designer, and it was set up and lit in a very special way. And you know, first David comes out, and then Tina comes out, and then I come out, and eventually you have eight or nine people on stage. And there were rolling risers. You know, we actually had the audiences get really upset because they would walk into the theater, you know, they would buy a ticket, walk into the theater, and the stage would be just empty, no musical instruments, nothing. They're like, what? and during the show, our stage crew would build the set, you know, as we went along. So it was kind of devised in a very visual way, and it was Jonathan Demme, who we became friends with and made an agreement to make the movie with him. Jonathan thought it was, you know, more or less perfect for cinematography, and he hired the cinematographer who had done Blade Runner, who had shot Blade Runner, which we loved, of course, and that man's name was Jordan Cronenweth. And he just made everybody look so great and so exciting. And, you know, the thing about Stop Making Sense is everybody involved did a really good job, from the band to the people that recorded the audio to the people that held the cameras and shot the movie to the people that did the lighting. You know, it's just everyone was at the top of their game. And thank God it still looks good today. I mean, it looks great.
We're talking with Chris Francis, the drummer from Talking Heads, author of the new book, Remain in Love, Talking Heads, Tom Tom Club, Tina. Chris, one more before you go. Number one song that you love playing live, and then just a Talking Heads song, or maybe Tom Tom Club, that you can still put on to this day, and you're like, boy, this is really good music.
Well, you know, there are many Talking Heads songs that I feel that way about. Feel great about, in fact, almost every single one. But let's pick a Tom Tom Club song, and I'm going to say Genius of Love, because every time we, you know, it's been a few years since we've done a Tom Tom Club tour, but when we do play it, you know, people love that song, and it's so much fun to play. And To me, that song was like a rocket ship for our little band, Tom Tom Club. It became a big international hit, and all around the world. And I feel very fortunate to have been a part of it.
Yeah, that's got to be a great feeling. I mean, it was sampled. Do you know how many times Genius of Love has been sampled as well?
Well, we have it on our Tom Tom Club website, which is sorely out of date, I'm afraid. You know, everybody sort of switched to Facebook, and they don't really go to websites anymore. So I have to update it. But last time I checked, it was over 150 times that song has been sampled.
That's got to be a good feeling to know that the song you created, not only was it insanely popular in and of itself, but here are a ton of musicians from all walks of life going, boy, this song is so great, but I want to use it in my own way. That's got to be, it's going to be pretty neat.
Yeah, it's a very good feeling. And one of the best feelings I ever had about that song was driving down the Boulevard of the Allies in Pittsburgh and hearing it blasting out of WAMO.
WAMO. Yeah. That's great stuff. Chris France, he's the drummer of Talking Heads. His new book is Remain in Love, Talking Heads, Tom Tom Club. Tina, Chris, I could talk to you for hours, but thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, Tyler. All the best.